Hey everybody, welcome to episode 20 of First Crack with Garrick Van Buren. Today I am sitting down with Sam Buchanan. Sam has a long coffee history, from barista to roaster, and now to Java developer. I know that's completely corny, but I couldn't help myself. We sit down at the newest Dumb Brothers, the one over on East Lake, that is, as a matter of fact, just a handful of blocks away from the Blue Moon that I brought you the other day. We talked with Cindy over at the Blue Moon, and then a little ways down is this new development with the Dumb Brothers that actually Greg Beale talked about in the interview with Roastmaster. This is the Dumb Brothers that burned to the ground and then had to be completely rebuilt. So anyway, Sam and I are checking it out. We talk about his history with coffee, his website, his web blog, afongen, afongen.com, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So sit back and enjoy. I didn't have an Oxford English Dictionary handy. I'm wondering if you could give me a definition of
afongen.
The lack of fong.
Interesting. No, as a wedding gift, at the time when I was working at the roastery, as probably roasting then, co-workers gave my wife and I a compact Oxford English Dictionary. It's really cool.
Yeah.
You know, a little, you know, magnifying glass, and I think there's like four or six pages per, you know, very large volume. And so we used it as a Scrabble dictionary, and we were just flipping through one day to learn. And one of the first words we came across was afong, A-F-O-N-G. And it just grabbed us because we thought, cool. It had been long dead. You know, I think the most recent reference to it in the OED was 800 years old. It looked like its heyday was about 1,000 years ago. And
everyone was using it.
And it meant... both to welcome and to seize or take by force.
Interesting.
And so the word grabbed, you know.
It grabbed me. Welcome.
So when I went to register a domain name, I went for a Fong, but it was taken by some guy named Alex Fong. I thought, hardly, yeah. You know. And so we went with the past participle. Okay. Afongen. That's what it is.
I was trying to, with my limited remaining Sherman knowledge, I was trying to untranslate it from Sherman, and it didn't work.
No, you'd have to.
Yeah.
There's no doubt a link very, very, very far back, but
maybe,
it's old enough.
Maybe 1,400 years ago.
Maybe. Maybe.
You were at the roastery,
mm-hmm.
and roasting there and being a barista there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it started as, I had worked as a barista in a number of different places and had given up. Started back into...
You've just been done with
I can't do this anymore. This is, you know, I loved coffee. I loved working with it, but, you know, the retail burnout.
Yeah.
And, you know, it had only been a few years, but still. But after, you know, in fact, I tried to go back to school and just not work. Just work on, you know, live on grants and loans and mm-hmm. things like that. It wasn't working out. So, fine, I'll go look for a job. And I wouldn't have gone in for coffee, except at the roastery, they had opened up not too much earlier, and I had... The manager of the store was Marge McCabe, who had been working at Dunn Brothers, like the original Lake Street store. And she had been one of my favorite roasters there when I lived in Uptown, and, you know, loved her work.
Yeah.
And so I thought, cool, I could work with Marge. and so I did, and worked, you know, as a barista. Learned a lot about coffee, which was neat. It had been a long time since I'd worked somewhere where I was actually learning about coffee instead of teaching about coffee. And before long, started roasting there.
Mm-hmm. And, you were roasting for a number of years.
Three years before I finally left the world entirely.
Ah.
Yeah. was it's cool. Between her and Jeremy Rass, who owned and had been roasting for quite some time, and then John Isom, who was he was a food scientist. And so I came at this with, when I was roasting, it was very much feeling my way around with the coffee. It was very, very intuitive. But at the same time, there was this, he's coming at it with this food science, you know, saying, as we move into first crack, it's an endothermic reaction. So you really kind of crank up the heat a little bit because it's going to need that for the chemical reactions to take place. Uh-huh. And so I got a better understanding of what's happening with the, you know, and then second crack is exothermic. Mm-hmm. So back off.
Was he the guy with the charts and the graphs and watching the curves and
all
that stuff?
Yeah, but at the same time, he abandoned food science and was going to art school.
Huh.
So he was also, he had charts and graphs, and actually Marge, too, down the way. And not as much as you'll see in some of the roasters. Dunn Brothers, definitely not. Yeah. But
when I was talking to Greg, he's like, mm-hmm. it's all by feel.
And I think I was years ago talking with I can't remember his name, but he was the roaster owner at Maravanda Coffee, who produced May Still. I honestly don't know if they're around. Fantastic espresso. And really, that's what they did. Yeah. They did espresso, regular decaf, and and that was it.
Yeah.
And it was the best espresso in town. But he was smell. That's what I remember. He was just, you're talking to him, and all of a sudden he just sort of go, shoot, and he'd run across the room and pull the beans out. But and that was pretty cool.
You still got a thing for the Guatemala.
Still like the Guatemala.
What about the Guatemala? What makes it your preferred?
It's it has, or it can have. I always felt when I was roasting that it was one of the most difficult beans to roast. Because if you got it right, and it had this rich depth to it that would just sort of surface, and it was really elusive, but it could be there. And occasionally I'll still find somebody who just gets it right. Yeah, and that's what I really like about the Guatemala. And there's this complexity that is hard to find, but you can get it.
Are there places that have been that you found that can consistently find that depth?
Yeah, actually the it's very strange. They do it as a French roast. The Dunn Brothers / it's like Finnish Bistro now.
Oh, what is it? Lauderdale or whatever?
St. Anthony.
Yeah.
Park.
Right. That
neighborhood.
Area that's, eight different cities all.
Exactly.
None of them. No, we're not part of the Twin Cities, but we're over by the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
Cute neighborhood.
It is. It is. And I would, on my bus ride into work every day, I would stop through. And they would, they do a French roast Guatemalan that, for a long time, was really consistent. And surprised me in liking the French roast. I think they nailed it.
It would be tough with the French roast to pull
out
that deep character and the roundness that a French roast has for.
It always surprised me. Yeah. And usually I'll avoid, French roast, in general.
Yeah.
They pull it off. Otherwise, no, not really. Mm. Not finding a whole lot of. And when I was at the roastery, we had a relationship with San Lucas Toliman, a cooperative, actually run, I think, by a Catholic mission.
Okay.
And the owner of the roastery was Catholic, and he had this connection with the priest who ran the mission.
Right.
And that was a really, really, we'd get in maybe 4 or 5 bags of grain every year, and it was a fantastic coffee. And we did. I mean, we gave them a top-notch price for it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that I really haven't tasted Guatemalan at that level otherwise. And you can still get it in the cities, but, you know, usually I think they're roasting it and selling it through, you know, local schools and stuff like that. So it's pre-roasted and tends to be really stale and icky.
Yeah.
Still.
Still.
At one time. Yeah.
So Sam went to school for French, really intense literature French. Like, so he knows a lot about the language. So I asked him the obvious question, right?
I'm really not doing much with my French. I feel horrible. I bumped into a professor of mine mm-hmm. a year ago, and I still feel horrible about it because she asked me the same question. She said, doing anything with French? No.
And do you answer her in French?
No, she was there with her partner, and I don't know if she speaks French or not, but and my wife, and so it we and it isn't really entirely true because but as I was working through college, the issue was not the language initially was the draw, and the French program at the U was very literature intensive, mm-hmm. but my interest quickly moved away from literature more into the linguistic side.
Right.
And there are always a couple faculty in the program who focus on the linguistics, and she was one of them. Mm-hmm. And so that the analysis and the close attention to detail that, you know, and the like pulling together disparate threads into you know, the historical linguistics is where I ended up.
Which explains more. The Oxford English Dictionary.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those skills that I developed, I still bring into my work every day, you know. In that way, yeah, I'm still using my French, and we're trying to teach. We have a 2-year-old son, and trying to raise him bilingual, but he's been resistant. For the first year, he would, you know, I'd speak to him in French, try to do so consistently. Didn't always work out because I have a very, sure, I could speak to you about sociolinguistics in French, but, you know, or literary theory, but daily life, not so much. And it was a problem for me in Quebec, when we were in Quebec, because
no,
I'd walk
really
into a restaurant. No, exactly. Like, I have really no good idea of how to do the little asking for a table ritual.
Okay.
You know, I hadn't really thought about it as something.
You could describe and analyze the ritual.
So that was a mess. Whereas my wife, mm-hmm. who remembered her junior high French classes and those little practice drills, she could go through those routines like, it was just no problem at all. So she was great. For that. The darndest time ordering a cup of coffee.
Wow.
But my son now, he resists the French. I start speaking French to him about the time he turned one, and he just says, "No French, papa, no français." He'll sometimes say it in French, you know, but it's just right away, no. And he'll start screaming if I keep talking. So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to push it. I don't want it to be this.
Right. Yeah, it's not like German words. It's right. Threatening language.
So, no, it's. I don't know what brought that up. But he'll watch. He'll watch videos and stuff, what little we do, or he'll listen to things in French and he'll like the songs, but he will not let me speak it.
Interesting. So. Okay, I'm going to completely change the subject. We met here because this is a brand new Dumb Brothers, and you hadn't been here before, and
right.
It hadn't really been here before either. So, what do you think of it?
You know, you made the comment that it's new. It's a little too new, and it does still feel like that.
I can't tell that it's a Dumb Brothers from where we're sitting, and that disappoints me.
Yeah. But there... There are a lot of them now, and they really are. Mm-hmm. They vary a lot. So, you know, I can I can see that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a little.
No sort of fake log cabin feel, so I know we're not at the caribou.
Thank God for that. Yeah.
Sam's been blogging for like 4+ years right now, okay, over at afongen.com. Yeah. And if you head over to his site and look over in the left-hand column, you'll see quite an extensive list of reeds that he hits every day, list of feeds and sites and stuff. So Sam, what's interesting? What are you looking at? What are you paying attention to these days? And, a really good story.
You know, honestly, where I've been spending the most attentive reading is, there are a few local people here. You know, I think Kate Sandwiched and Primate Brow Flash, Primate Brow Flash is Tim McGuire, who's local web developer. I think he works with DNR and dealt with PHP, and I think similarly he's now in Java world, and his wife Kate, who's been writing about her experiences with started the blog when her mom was diagnosed with brain cancer and I think came to live with her, and so writing about those experiences. And it happened about the same time that another friend of mine, her mother was also diagnosed with brain cancer and chose not to be treated. And so she blogged that, and you know, and her dad too would post some stuff, and really it's just recounting the last weeks of this woman's life and the things that she done. Is really powerful. You know, yeah. And when she finally she died, Camille had posted something one morning. He's like, I just got a call that, you know, she's not doing well, so I'm heading to Iowa. And then an hour later, she said, you know, my mom just died. And this is, you know, and I had just arrived at work, and I had had it emailed, you know, to me, and I was just, I'd like go into a room, and I was crying a little bit, so it was hard. And so since about that time, Kate started her blog with similar, but her mom was going through treatment.
Okay.
So it's a very...
Yeah, having that, both stories happening at the same time. Yeah.
You know, yeah, I'm going through that. But.
You have the Christmas questionnaire up on your site, and it's been up there for a couple of, week and a half now.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. The thing that grabbed me, as I mentioned when I first started talking, was your dream vacation.
Yes.
Yes. And tell me how that's different than, say, what you're going to do tomorrow.
I'm going to be here instead of in Quebec. Yeah, I don't remember exactly how I put it, but my idea of vacation is, I mean, I like to relax and to do so. It really doesn't matter so much where I am, but I really like Quebec, and so.
Even though you have some difficulty getting around.
If I can order coffee, I'm good. Okay. And sometimes that's difficult, but. No. So that's. Yeah, I.
Cool. Where do you go in town for a good cup of coffee? Or do you just avoid all establishments and make it at home and then take it wherever you need to go, knowing that this is mine?
And I went through a long stretch when I was not really making coffee at home. And I didn't even have I had a French press, but it broke. And so for a long time, I really just didn't make any at home. And so I would typically go to a Dunn Brothers, you know, for the coffee. What I really like, what I'm really more passionate about than just is espresso, but that's so touchy. It's so hard. And it isn't even so much where you go as who makes it. And typically Espresso Royale, they'll be able to pull a decent shot, but occasionally there's been, you know, she's long gone now. Someone I referred to as the one true barista. She poured a phenomenal shot.
The one true barista. If I were, uh, if I were in the market to start a religion, perhaps I would put that that title at the top of the religion.
And she'd be the one, but yeah, she's gone now, and I'm sure English major's off somewhere. But no, typically.
You're mm-hmm. brothers, but you're looking for that one true barista again,
mm-hmm.
someplace.
Yeah, but it's hard because I'm afraid to try people's espresso. So finding that one true barista would be, because there's so much bad espresso out there. That slogging through it just turns out to be expensive and distasteful. So, and you know, even Dun Brothers, I've never actually had a really good espresso at Dun Brothers. I think that their focus is typically on the brewed coffee. Yes. More. I'm sure they sell a ton of espresso drinks, but their philosophy for espresso has never been. And really, I think that gets back to Ed Dunn. He never cared so much for espresso. In my conversations with him, talked with him a number of times, and part of that was when I was working at the roastery, just, you know.
Right.
Would know some of the roasters around, and we actually driving around one day with Jeremy, who owned the roastery, and we ended up at a Dunn's out in Minnetonka, on Minnetonka Boulevard or something like that. They'd opened up not too much earlier, and Ed just happened to be there. It was a franchise, but he was roasting.
Oh,
so we sat and we chatted
nice.
With him for about half an hour, and yeah, and so that was pretty cool. But otherwise, I occasionally try. Actually, what's funny about that is, as we drove away, Jeremy looked at me and he's like, "Did you notice how, in all that time we were talking, he never once mentioned the Illuminati?" And I started laughing. Okay, don't you think that odd? So Ed apparently was covering something up. But
right, because if you're not talking about it constantly,
you're hiding something. But I clearly should never have loaned him Foucault's pendulum, but yeah.
So you stopped making it at home for a while.
Yeah.
You picked it up again?
Yeah, entirely because we were having people over.
Oh, wow.
Had, you know, birthday party or something. I thought, I need to make coffee. And so I
pulled out the broken French.
No, I actually ended up with, surprisingly, a Mr. Coffee, a pretty decent
oh, nice.
One. So, you know, I shopped around a bit. I didn't want to spend too much on a drip maker, but it ended up being, you know, $50-$60, something like that. But there are a lot of really neat features about it.
Oh, yeah. What do you like about it?
It brews at the right temperature.
Ah.
Don't always find that in your $10 Mr. Coffees
no.
or your garage sale. No.
It's a brew at like 100 degrees.
You know?
It's happening.
Not good. It actually dispenses water through, it's maybe is that 3-inch, 3-4-inch disc? It's the same size, and it's evenly distributed across the
grounds.
It actually comes with a water filter. Just a simple thick filter. It just rests on top of the filter basket.
Huh.
And so the water distributes, you know, evenly, is actually filtered through that, and I'm sure just like removes chlorine or, you know, the worst of it. But that was a neat little feature. Turns itself off after 2 hours, so you can actually adjust the temperature, and most importantly, turn the burner temp way, way down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's entirely off, but I don't really care.
Yeah.
Very smaller pots, but there are enough little features that, and it actually took a little while, figured it out, and brews a decent cup.
So nice.
I'm happy with it.
So no espresso at home. You're not aiming for
No. I would someday maybe if I feel like really splurging, I'll buy myself. But I don't. I have a friend who will occasionally go over to his house and he'll have roasted some espresso and he has actually I don't know if he still has it, a nice little Pavone, a little hand pump.
Nice.
But those are cool, but never really generate enough pressure to be a really good shot. And that's the thing, is that I need to invest a lot more than I'm really willing to.
Yeah.
But what it really means is that for years I haven't had a good shot. So maybe I should.
Right, yeah. I can't invest. First off, wouldn't know where to put it. Although there was, maybe at some point when I get, have my home custom made, I'll get the in-wall espresso.
Oh, there you go.
Drip coffee combo. Yeah, it's just kind of built in like the, like the microwave or the fridge. Or
right.
Whatever. Yeah. It's,
yeah, but you need to have the roaster too.
You do. I think that's the thing. You need to have the roaster in the house, or at least in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
Hooked up to the gas line and the water heater.
Right.
Yeah.
And vented if it's in the house. Yeah, that's
right.
And actually, now having bought a house in St. Paul, one of the things I'm excited about is probably this summer, start roasting at home.
Yeah.
Haven't been, because an apartment just wasn't nice to my neighbors.
No. That's when I started, too.
Yeah.
And the downstairs neighbors would come up and say, should we be concerned? I'll brew another pot. I'll roast another pot for you. Just a moment.
All right. So I'd like that. Maybe someday, the San Franciscan, that's the type of roaster you're finding in a lot of the Duns, they actually make a very small, really it's a sample roaster. I think it does like a pound.
That's perfect.
Yeah. It's $1,000, or at least it was 10 years ago. I don't know what it is now, but that'd be pretty sweet. Even comes with a little fake afterburner. It just collects the chaff. It doesn't actually do anything. But.
You still got the chaff to deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been busy, I've heard some of my other folks like prefer the treated, either the decaf or the aged or something, as to minimize the chaff that gets around the house. Because I'll find it just the weirdest.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't roasted here for weeks. What's this stuff doing around?
It's hard.
Yeah.
Hey. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Sam Buchanan. If you want to find out more about what's on Sam's mind on a regular basis, head over to his weblog, afongen.com. Feel free to drop me a line and let me know what you think of the show, what do you think of the series, what do you think of everything, and what do you think of coffee? Hell yeah. Email is firstcrack.com. All one word, at GarrickVanBuren.com. And that's right, the voicemail line, the Bean line, is open, 206-20-BEAN-1. Thanks for listening.